CBSSports.com NBA podcast. I'm your host, Matt Moore. Joining me right now are Michael Levin and Jordan Sams of LibertyBallers.com, SB Nation's Philadelphia 76ers blog. And they are very excited because their team has opted to forego mediocrity in pursuit of something bigger. Obviously, the big trade last week, sending Andre Iguodala out after years of having him on the trade block, sending him to Denver in the four-way deal that brought back Andrew Bynum. Mike, let's start with you. You know, what in your mind makes this such a huge move for the Sixers philosophically, not just from a basketball standpoint, but in terms of what it says about where the franchise is headed?
Well, philosophically is how I like this move the best, actually. They were offensively like 3 minutes and a few crazy Rajon Rondo threes away from making the Eastern Conference Finals. But as we know, Derrick Rose's ACL and Joakim Noah's, I think it was a foot that he broke, had a lot to do with it. They would have gotten swept if that didn't happen. So I didn't think that they were going to tear it down because, like, hey, you know, we're so close, we could just add a couple pieces and make it. But the fact that they recognized that the team wasn't good enough and that they only got there basically by dumb luck and injuries, it deserves a lot of respect, and respect that I wasn't giving them before. So philosophically, to tear it down and make such a huge move after being realistically the fifth team left in the league, it's a pretty ballsy move, and I appreciate the crap out of it.
Jordan, you know, they moved their best player in Andre Iguodala, and over the years I've really come to appreciate Iguodala and what he brings. I thought last year he was absolutely fantastic. I had him at the top of my Defensive Player of the Year list for a lot of the year, even without the metrics really being in support of it, just because I watched him night in and night out guarding the best guys in the league one-on-one to allow the rest of the Sixers defense to do its thing, which is very, very good. You know, is there a concern that there's not going to be enough left with what's, you know, the remaining roster to build around Bynum?
I get the Iguodala question. I might get the Bynum question. I see how it is. I know, Matt, that I'm glad you finally came around on Iguodala, because I know we had our debates in the past. But with Iguodala, obviously it's gonna hurt the defense a little bit. But I do think that Evan Turner can play kind of that role a little bit with guarding the opposing team's best perimeter scorer. Obviously, he's not as good as Iguodala, but I think his defense kind of got overshadowed by Iguodala's great defense. And then Drew Holiday is also a great defender. So obviously, they're going to miss Iguodala's defense, and among other things. But I think Turner and Drew can make up for it. I also think that people are kind of underestimating the losses of Lou Williams and Elton Brand. I think they'll have their losses will have just as impactful a meaning as the loss of Iguodala, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that with what, you know, Brand wasn't going to be – he didn't do anything near to what he was doing in his prime, but he was definitely contributing last year and adding scoring, easy scoring, which is something that people kind of get lost in when they look at the NBA, the value of guys that can consistently make the easy play and just get those buckets, because there's so many guys that screw that up. Most of them played for the Wizards last year. You know, Jordan, my other question I think would be, in that same vein with the supporting cast, you know, the Lakers had a huge problem last year with getting Bynum the ball. I mean, it was actually a legitimate issue getting him the ball. They had a lot of trouble with entry passes. The Sixers have not had a dominant force in terms of an inside post presence. You know, obviously nothing like Bynum, but really nothing even coming close to it. Brand was operating either at the elbow or kind of more in face up from space. You know, and when he did do work in the post, you know, he wasn't taking on a high usage. Is there a concern that with so much emphasis going to be placed on trying to deny Bynum the ball, that could be a problem? Or do you think Drew Holiday is a good enough point guard to be able to manage that?
Well, obviously there's a little uncertainty and a little unknown, because as you said, that Drew Holiday's never played with a good big man. He played, and remember, he didn't even play with Dallin there. He's played in his whole Sixers career with – did he play with Dallin Bear? I don't know if he did or not, but his rookie year he did. Mainly he's been playing with Spencer Hawes, and as anybody who watched Spencer Hawes in the Celtics series knows, he's pretty bad. he's pretty terrible. And that's an understatement. But, no, I think I compared it when I wrote about it that people are saying, oh, Drew's going to have to adjust and he's going to have to learn how to feed a big man. But I compared it to, like, that's like adjusting from going from, like, a mediocre-looking girlfriend to Kate Upton. It's like, yeah, it's adjusting, but it really shouldn't be that difficult. And I think Drew will definitely – Drew and Evan are both pretty good. They're good ball handlers, good passers. Drew is a great point guard, and I think he's going to benefit greatly by playing with a legitimate big man.
Mike, you know, this is obviously Bynum's team now, and they're going to do everything they can to emphasize that for a number of reasons, including they need to re-sign him, so they got to make sure that he feels wanted. But outside of Bynum, you know, who do you think benefits the most from this move on Philadelphia?
Yeah, I think it's Drew. He needs to play with the big man that can play. The issue is, I mean, the Sixers are literally only keeping five guys from the team last year, and that's Drew, Evan, Thad, Lavoie, and Hawes. So it's a huge turnover. So the issue for me is how quickly the offense is gonna you know, catch up to itself. Doug's never had a center like with Bynum's ability that he's had to build an offense around. So I think it's going to take some time, but ultimately, only halfway through the season, I think they're going to really hit their stride, and Drew and Bynum especially are going to be really solid together.
When we look at the core of this team, you know, is it going to be – does Evan Turner have to get there, Mike? Is that really kind of the key here, is that
yeah.
Turner's going to have to become that combo guard,
absolutely,
you know, versatile kind of guy for them to get to the next level?
Yeah, I mean, Jordan has his own opinions about Evan Turner. He doesn't want him to start, which we'll debate sometime. But I think without Turner becoming, you know, your third best player behind Drew and Bynum, then the team really doesn't matter yet. You know, Bynum is a good franchise cornerstone. He's a guy you build around. But not putting Evan Turner as that third guy, I mean, if you have, like, Jason Richardson or Thad Young, they aren't good enough where – them as your third guy would ever vault you into contention in any respect. Turner has the ability, at least theoretically, to become that third guy, even second, if he surpasses Drew. So I think you have to give Turner 35 minutes a game. You have to give him every opportunity to become who he can become. Because while, you know, Darrell Wright or Jason Richardson or Nick Young are all better shooters than him, they don't have nearly the potential, and the team wouldn't be able to succeed in the long run as much with them in the forefront. So I think Turner really has to step up. Ultimately, he needs a jump shot. I don't think anyone's going to disagree that he needs a jump shot bad. I don't think he has to become, you know, Kyle Korver from three, but at least something to keep defenses honest, especially when you dump it into Bynum in the post. So without that, I think he's too inefficient without that to play regularly, but I'd give him the entire year to really, you know, find his own.
Jordan, we've seen, you know, the offense at times make some curious decisions, we'll say, in terms of where the ball goes and when and why. You know, I made an argument after the trade that I still, you know, I'm backed off of, I think, a little bit. I think the odds are low, but I think it's still possible. I think Bynum could be a top three scorer next year, just off of what is around him, even with the kind of pace that they play at. You know, I just think that he's going to be so dominant with what he's going to be able to do. You know, if he shows what he did last year with the kind of touches that he should get in Philadelphia, I think he can produce at that level. I think he's just got that capability. Do you think that there's going to be more of a balance, though? I mean, they do have Nick Young. That was what everyone responded to me with, which was Nick Young's on the team, so clearly he's going to shoot. Do you think that, but more from the overall structure of the offense, do you think that Collins is going to opt more to make sure that it is evenly balanced, that there's not wear and tear on Bynum, that they have, you know, more of a team concept, or do you think Bynum's going to get the touches that he needs to really produce at a ridiculous level?
Well, I think Bynum's going to get the touches he needs. I think anybody would be crazy to have kind of like the balanced offense that Collins had last year where the leading scorer was Lou Williams with 15 off the bench. I think Bynum's a lock for 20 points a game. I think he'll get at least 20 shots a game. But I think it's going to be I think they'll have a lot of like the Dwight Howard Orlando Magic kind of thing going on, where they did add a lot of shooting this off season. So I think there's going to be, if Bynum can figure out how to work the double teams, I think they'll be a top 10 3-point shooting team. And then I think Drew will get somewhere around 15 points, and I think Evan's going to take a lot of shots, because as Mike alluded to, I want him coming off the bench, but he's going to start, and I've kind of accepted that. And he's going to get a lot of shots too, because he has the ball. So I think it's going to be relatively balanced, but there's no chance that Bynum doesn't get 20 shots a game.
And Mike, can Spencer Hawes work effectively next to Bynum?
I don't think Spencer Hawes is a starter in the NBA, but I'm kind of intrigued. I mean, he's a starter because he started before, but then like a starter on a good team, you don't want him as a starter. But I'm intrigued to have his passing with the high-low with Bynum. I think it'll be miserable in the defensive end because he can't cover fours at all. But at least for some of the game, I'm sort of intrigued to see what Hawes at, you know, the top of the key can do passing the ball with Bynum and then with shooters on the wing. So, you know, if he operates sort of, I mean, not like a point forward, but at least he will be the captain of the offense for some of the time, which will be interesting. And I think it'll be a nice little niche. The reason I don't want Thad starting, I'm kind of two minds with Thad starting, is because if you have Thad on the starting lineup, then the bench is just all basically the same guy. Lavoie, Spencer, Kwame, Moultrie, all these guys can do the same thing, whereas Thad is sort of like that hybrid four that can come in and you know, piss teams off. So at least you have him on the bench, and it kind of creates some versatility there. But with Hawes, I mean, he's terrible. He's bad at basketball, but he'll be less bad at basketball with Andrew Bynum next to him.
You know, I think he was terrible in that Celtics series because of a matchup. He did show a lot during the year. I was impressed with him for most of the year in terms of his progression. And I think his team defense was okay. It's one of the things I think the Celtics did a lot was they put him on an island, and they made it where we're going to hurt you here. And if you put a guy like that in a situation and you don't cover for him and, you know, you don't play Lavoie Allen, you get in trouble. And I think that's part of what happened. I think that Hawes can fit well if he's in a lesser role. And I think maybe this is going to be a good opportunity for that. I think that, you know, situation is really interesting to look at. I know that historically he's preferred to play three, and this obviously opens up more opportunities for him at that position, but they're still going to need probably him to come in and rebound and do the things that he does at the four. So it's really more of a, you know, I think he's going to continue doing a lot of what he did last year, only more so with, he's going to be allowed to play more of a combo forward, and I think that maybe that'll help him to maybe get to a next level. You know, if we're looking at one thing from the offseason that disappointed you outside of the money spent on, you know, Hawes and Brown, even though that those guys now look like great, you know, kind of, if those aren't your primary guys down low, you feel a lot better about it. I'll ask this to both of you, first Mike, then Jordan. Mike, you know, what is the thing that I think that maybe disappoints you the most about the Sixers offseason?
Well, I think you have to look at it roundly as a success, because, I mean, nothing else matters other than Bynum. Like, they could have signed me to a 5-year deal and have been like, well, whatever. It doesn't matter.
They got Bynum
and then everything else. But I would have kind of liked them to see – them trade Thad. I don't think he – I think his contract's too much for the role that he has, and I think that would have been a good opportunity to create some cap space next offseason. I want them to make a run at Paul Millsap. I think he's the perfect four next to Bynum. But I'd say maybe not trading Thad and also getting a legitimate backup point guard to back up Drew, although – I think in their mind, Evan Turner is the backup point guard, so it's not like we're going to see a lot of Royal Ivy or Sheep Waynes.
And Jordan?
Well, I agree with Mike on pretty much everything. I agree that I've been wanting them to trade Thad for a little bit, and obviously, you know, signing Spencer Hawes was not something I wanted to do, nor was signing Kwame Brown. But I'll go, since Mike pretty much covered that, I'll go with how about getting a GM? Because they don't have a GM. So that might have helped a little bit.
Trying to have another in the – I know they're close in that process. I think they'll probably have that sewn up pretty soon. Last question for you guys. I'll start with Jordan, and then we'll go to Mike. What's the ceiling for this team?
This season?
Yes.
I think I'm a little less optimistic than everybody else. I don't think they can compete with the Heat, and I think Bonham's a stud, obviously, and I love the trade. I'll do it 100 times over. But I think they lost a lot with Iguodala, Brand, Lou, like I was talking about earlier. So I think, and it's kind of hard. It's really hard to predict because they do have five returners, and that's it. And like we're talking about earlier, Drew's never played with a big man. Collins has never coached a big man. So I think it's going to take them a little while to mesh and figure it out. But I think ultimately they're going to be in between like that 4 and 6 seed, and then potentially win a series or two, maybe. That's
okay.
It.
Mike?
I think ceiling, if you're talking ceiling, if everything clicks, it's the 2 seed. Because there really is, it's a pretty wide open race. You know, you don't know how the Nets are going to be. You're not sure what the Pacers are going to be like returning. The Celtics are old. You're not really sure. So I think ceiling-wise, it's a 2. Floor is maybe like, you know, if Bynum gets hurt, it's obviously out of the playoffs. But if everyone stays reasonably healthy, I think it's like a 7 seed. So I agree with Jordan. I'm thinking them kind of in that 4 spot. You know, win a series, lose the Heat in the second round. But the biggest thing about the season is that it matters now. It literally didn't matter before. They could have done anything at all, and it's like, well, who cares? They have no chance. It doesn't matter. But now they have a core set up, and it's still about Evan and Drew improving, but at least they have that guy where everything else is building around him so that, you know, improvement and team chemistry actually matters as much as, you know, playoff experience with, you know, who cares about playoff experience for Jody Meeks? It doesn't matter. Like, he's a nice little player, but he's off the team, and it doesn't matter. Now it matters, and so that's what's important about this team. I don't really care result-wise so much as the progress that the young guys make.
And Alad, I got one more for you, just real quick. First Mike, then Jordan. Give me your grade for the offseason. I think I know the answer, but I want to check.
If you asked me maybe a week ago, I would have said probably like a B+, just because they kept short contracts, and that was definitely their goal. But I mean, Bynum's, it's an A+. Like, nothing else matters. I can't express how little anything else matters. We have Bynum. We are now a team. Before, it was like the guys who hang out and play basketball sometimes. Now it's like a team that matters and could feasibly make a run, maybe not this year, but down the road in terms of like an actual championship team. A+.
Jordan.
Yeah. A+ as well. It doesn't really matter about anything else. They got Andrew Bonham. That was something that I never even fathomed. I never thought that was possible. I couldn't have even dreamed of, if I had proposed that trade on Twitter, on the blog, people would like laugh me off Twitter, as they rightfully should have. So I could have never imagined that. It's an A+, and kind of piggybacking off what Mike said, results don't really matter. Like, if they make the playoffs, cool. If they win this couple series, cool. But the point is, now that they have 2 and possibly 3 pieces to build a championship team around, and they're all under 25, and now we have that ceiling of a championship team somewhere down the road, where they didn't ever.
Yeah. Oh, and I think I should say also that I definitely think that Bynum's going to resign. But even if he doesn't, for whatever reason, he opts out. Or not opt out, but he doesn't want to sign for the max and more years here. It's still the right move. 100%. This was the right move because they had to go out and do something. And it's if he doesn't resign, they're going to be terrible. And that's much better than where they were before. So,
agreed.
Absolutely 100%. This is the right move. If Bynum hates it here, everything goes wrong, still the right move.
I mean, that kind of wraps it up. I think, you know, the theme for the Sixers next year is going to be "Nothing Compares to Bynum." Maybe that's the theme song of next year for the Sixers. Thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate it. That's Mike Levin and Jordan Sams of LibertyBallers.com. You should definitely check out the site. It's absolutely fantastic. They've got great tone, excellent content. They cover everything. You can catch them on Twitter. Jordan's at Sams Jordan, and Mike's at Michael_Levin. On Twitter. You can also check them out at Philly 76ers blog on Twitter. Make sure you check them out. Absolutely fantastic site. And that'll wrap it up for the CBSSports.com NBA podcast. Be sure to check us out on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. And you can also subscribe to our RSS feed for these podcasts, as well as you can catch us on iTunes. And we'd really appreciate all the support. Thanks so much, and we'll catch you guys next time.